Off the Ball.
Home of the Saturday panel. Every Saturday from 1.
On Newstalk 106 to 108.
We're looking at the League of Ireland on today's Saturday panel, joined in studio by Daniel Lambert, who is strategic planning manager at Bohemians, Shane Keegan, who is the manager of Galway United, and Stewie Byrne, our regular League of Ireland pundit and a multiple League of Ireland champion. How many did you win in the end?
4 in the end, yeah.
Just the 4?
Yeah, just the 4.
Where are your medals?
I don't know, they're at home somewhere. I more regret that the ones didn't win. That's the unfortunate side of things. But.
So we're going to take a pretty broad look at where the league stands at the moment. As you look at it, Stewie, and your involvement over the last couple of decades, where is the league right now? Is it in a good place?
Well, I think I would have been really worried if the likes of Dundalk and Cork hadn't come along. I specifically say Dundalk, because I think Dundalk had a huge say in giving Cork a kick in the rear end, like, you know. But if that hadn't happened in the last couple of years, I would have been extremely worried, because I think there's an awful lot going on with other sports. You know, we're kind of being left behind. I'm sort of, you could constantly see the progression of rugby and GAA in particular, because they're the two sports that are sort of in direct fire with soccer, and they are just getting better and better year on year. Even looking back at the recent bid for the Rugby World Cup, I think if that had happened, if we had won that, I'd have been extremely worried about the game here, because
in terms of the investment that was going to go into stadiums around the country.
Exactly, that's exactly it, because, you know, the GAA stadiums are already in good nick, the rugby stadiums are in good nick. If that was to happen, I think football would have been left in the dark ages. And it doesn't help that, you know, when you look at the rugby and the GAA, you look at the associations and how they purely develop the game domestically. Now, I know the GAA, obviously, it only happens domestically, but the rugby is a really good example. Like, you look at the likes of Simon Zeebo. He goes to Paris, to France, out of the Ireland team, because they are purely focused on developing the game here in this country. And I think we need to take a leaf out of that book, and we need to start looking at our own association and trying to specifically try to develop the game here, the domestic game here, because it's getting to the stage anyway that very, very fewer players are getting away. Fewer players are making it in England. I think the numbers are dwindling year on year. I mean, the percentage
in terms of the 15 and 16 year olds going over
were always very, very low. Now they're ridiculously low. And you know, you look at the success of the likes of Daryl Horgan, Sean Maguire, and so on and so forth. Wes Houlihan. It's a great model that these guys come back maybe and play their football here, and then possibly go to England. But I think the game here needs serious attention along the lines of how the rugby do their business. I would have thought. I mean, I was only thinking about this quite recently, just to kind of not to go on too much about the rugby. But could you imagine if loads of people from Munster, from Galway, right, from Dublin, all of a sudden started to get on a plane every Saturday to go over to England to watch Wasps or Clonetley or whoever the hell it might be, like, you know. Imagine the effect it would have on the game here. It would destroy it. And that's effectively what happens with the soccer, because it's a legacy issue, of course, because it goes back to what happened in the 70s and 80s, but with the whole rise of football in England. But you just if you just think about it like that, the game here can't develop, and it can't move forward at the rate it needs to go forward at, because we can't get enough people to come to games and to buy into it here. So there's a huge sea change that needs to happen, and it is almost along the lines where we need to kind of almost we need to sell it to people better, and people need to look within themselves patriotically almost and say, you know, there's a crisis here. You know, we need people to buy into this. We need to, we need their help, otherwise it won't work, you know.
There's a lot in that, Daniel.
Sorry about that.
We'll come back to all those points. Daniel, when you look at the league, where it is right now and where Bohemians are, what sort of state do you think it's in?
I think it's not in as bad a state as Stewie paints there. I think there's one thing that was mentioned there. He's right in terms of people do they go to games in the UK predominantly. I think a lot of that is down to the marketing. The marketing of the Premier League is a model and a beast that you're not going to tackle. And I think the mistake is being made. I think too often, and the FAI can do more and should do more, but too often the blame is placed for me at the hands of the FAI. The FAI should do this or they should do that. And as I said, there are things they should do, but the clubs have to look at themselves. I think we've, over the last few years, totally changed our approach in terms of trying to get people to games, what we offer at games, what the club is about as a club rather than as a team that play in the Electricity League. And I think that, you know, when young people come to a game, there's no point in trying to tackle the Premier League head on, because you just won't offer the glamour, the non-stop coverage that they offer. But there are things that the clubs can focus in on and begin to get people involved. And I think the biggest mistake the clubs have made is that they've isolated themselves. They've basically been about one team. They've neglected underage systems, predominantly women's teams. They've neglected being about a broader club rather than just about a team. And they haven't made themselves relevant to the areas that they're in. And that's what the GAA and rugby do. They make themselves relevant. So if you look at essentially Bohemians, and it's more and more clubs, thankfully, in League of Ireland now, are moving to members' own models. But we are essentially a GAA club in structure that plays soccer. We're subcommittees and committees, and we're all volunteers. So nobody earns a salary. And I was on the board of Bohemians for 10 years. I never earned a penny. It cost me money to do. And that's very similar to people I know that are in the GAA. And if you look at it, you know, a local GAA club hosts an event, everyone there is a volunteer. They're not paying people. And I think that's the mistake that a lot of clubs tried to professionalise in a way that was superficial. It was top heavy. And I think
you're a community, whereas a lot of clubs are almost turning their back on the community.
Absolutely, yeah. Like we maybe talk about it later, but we had a strategic plan before the FAI, before it kind of went public last year, and the kind of debacle about the strategic plans. But we put in that strategic plan, number one and two were interchangeable, and they were community and football, and they truly are interchangeable. Our work in the community is as important as our team on the pitch, and. You know, it's something I think that's worth mentioning. For the first time this season, ourselves and Cork got EU funding from the EU Regional Development Fund for our work in the communities. It's quite substantial funding over an 18-month period.
How much?
It's basically what it does is it employs two full-time and one part-time person per club to work solely on community activities. And the thing about community work is that it's too often, again, in League of Ireland, it's linked to marketing. So the idea has been that you do work in the community to get people to come to your games. But people see right through that. You should do work in the community to do good in your community. And over time, then, that trickles back and people get involved in the running of the club, in volunteering, whether it's at your academy or your underage structures, and coming to games. And I think that's a key change that needs to happen. And it can be driven by the clubs themselves.
Shane, you're on the front line in the League of Ireland as a manager and have been for numerous seasons now. Is it an enjoyable place to work?
Look, I suppose that essentially really comes down to results you're going through at the time. You ask a manager at a different stage, they will come out with different answers depending on how things are going. But I do think, in general, I think the league is on an upward curve. I think it's probably on an upward curve from a fairly low base, having plummeted for a good few years. There's a few different reasons behind it. I'd say the first one is, I think the League of Ireland generally tends to reflect the economic climate in the country very, very closely. I think during the Celtic Tiger, I think the league was flying. I think the crash came. I think the league probably crashed with it to a certain extent. And I won't say the good times are back, but, you know, the country in general seems to be on a bit of an upward curve. And I think the health of the clubs is maybe starting to be reflected in that a little bit. I think the product at the moment is good compared to other eras. I don't know, more people would know a bit more than that than I would, but I do think at the moment it's good. One of the main reasons it's good is because, as Stewie said, we're losing less players to England because there's less chance, because they're now not just competing with the English and Scottish and Welsh for positions, they're competing with the whole world, which means we've more of them here. And then obviously the huge, huge improvements in the underage structures in the league over the last while means that we're getting more and more good quality players through from underage sides. So I do think the product on the pitch at the moment is very, very good. And, you know, I think there is an awful lot to be optimistic about. Look, as a manager, it's the same as it is in any country. You're week to week, you know, a bad month and you're gone. I suppose the big difference over here, if you look particularly maybe at the likes of a Bose, you know, I think players move directly from playing careers into managerial careers in the UK. Over here, I think players move out of their playing career into a job, and then a part-time management job comes along, and then if they're offered an opportunity for a full-time management job, that's a hell of a risk to be taken. look, I don't think too many disagree that Keith was possibly the outstanding manager in the league based on resources this year. As far as I know, Keith has quite a decent day job. You know, if one of the big four, let's call them the four qualifying for Europe at the moment, if one of them come in for Keith, is Keith willing to pack in a steady day job that he's potentially doing very well in to go into full time League of Ireland management?
Well, he could be back out in your arse 18 months later.
Absolutely, you know. So that's certainly an issue that any potential manager coming into the league would have to look at, you know.
The community aspect, I think, of it is very interesting because, as you say, I think Bowls have really been to the forefront of this in a lot of ways in terms of marketing and promotion. And you look at where Bohemians is right now and the area around there, it's sort of become hipster central around Phibsborough and around Stony Batter, and you've tapped into that market with your advertising and with the bar at the stadium and getting people to come and make a Friday night out of it, but also, as you say, at a deeper level within the community. And that seems to be such an issue for so many League of Ireland clubs, and Galway is probably a prime example of this. Like, we see this week the chairman of the Galway FA resigning because of the lack of support that he sees within the Galway FA for Galway United. And I think back to when I covered Galway United for years, and when Salthill Devon and Mervew were there and the structures at underage level, that really Galway United should be the top of the pyramid within Galway football, probably South Mayo football, East Roscommon, all those areas, and that should be the top of the pyramid, and all the clubs beneath sort of feed into that and take a pride in what Galway United do and go and support the club on a Friday night. If anything, that has never happened within football, and it seems as though that's replicated in clubs throughout the country.
Yeah, it's a problem everywhere. I mean, my underage soccer would have been in Kilkenny. I thought it was politics in Kilkenny. I went and started out in League of Ireland at Wexford. There was definitely politics there, but I mean, it's certainly a whole new level over in Galway, that's for sure. You know, you've described the different entities involved, and it's very, very messy. Now, I suppose from the club's point of view, we're now, you've probably read as well, we're now in a situation where the club is now supporter owned. Obviously, when it came back into the league, there was four entities. There was the supporters group, the Galway FA, Salthill and Mervew, and one by one they've stepped away. So it's now supporter owned. And to be honest with you, that's got a fantastic response for us. Well publicised club, found it a struggle off the field last year in terms of balancing books and getting the support that we needed and all that kind of thing. And the reason for that was there was so few bodies and so few hands trying to run the club last year. It was just those who did manage to steer it through to the end of the season, I mean, fair play to them, it was fantastic. I don't know how they managed it, but what it resulted is, with this new structure, the club held an EGM last week. You had 100 people at the EGM. It went really, really well. They stood up, they told them just how difficult it had been the previous year and just how hard it is to run a League of Ireland club. I think it only got through to people really then at that stage. They did various different things, separated into subgroups with various different headings. I mean, to give you a practical example, so I think one of the subgroup headings was season tickets. So there's maybe 15, 20 people broke into a group where their sole job is to drive season tickets. Now, we had a Black Friday sale yesterday, and the season ticket sales on Black Friday yesterday were up 50%.
Right.
That's a team that have just been relegated, no point shying away from it, and have just lost four or five of their star players, because all of a sudden, rather than one fella trying to give ideas as to how to push season tickets, 20 fellas are giving ideas as how to try and push season tickets. I'm not even sure the various different ideas and initiatives that they pushed for it, but whatever they did worked. It certainly worked, and it's a good sign that hopefully those kinds of things will keep working for the club. You know, you need hands on deck, that's for sure.
I think there's a point on that chain as well. The PCA obviously has been set up between the clubs, and the clubs have you know, I think better cooperation at the PCA level, where you've got the chairman of clubs and senior people within the clubs meeting regularly. And one thing I've pushed for at the PCA, and it hasn't come to fruition yet, is that those ideas, like, we've worked on a whole series of things over the past 5 years, and we've honed in a lot of what we do now. We found, for instance, we released a series of t-shirts recently, and they're kind of themed on Daily Mount, but you can often do short runs of t-shirts, especially if you start to tap into the broader kind of European football market through platforms like Copa and YouTube, where you can reach far greater markets and make a lot more money selling short limited edition runs of t-shirts than you can from a jersey. And it's small ideas like this can make a big impacts on your finances. And what should happen at the PCA level is that the clubs share these ideas between themselves, and they cooperate off the pitch and
What's
compete
PCA
on it.
Dan, sorry,
it's the Premier Clubs Alliance.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, okay.
But there are simple things. Another thing that group could do, I think one of the biggest costs to clubs, and it sounds funny, but it's coaches around the country. It's a coach, especially now with the underage elite leagues. But how the clubs can come together, you know, and negotiate a kind of an overall deal. Every club has to go to the same stadiums. So we negotiate, you know, a league deal with a major coach provider, a Busera, McLaren or somebody of a, you know, a similar company, and then have economies of scale as a league. And these things have never happened. They're very basic business principles that should be applied to the league.
It's huge in America, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
In, you know, in the States, they have that kind of, I think there's a kit deal across all teams.
Absolutely.
In the States, and they have various different things.
Every club produces a program, you know, make templates, drag and drop them, just bring the thing together and have a bit more of a professional setup. And I think that these are really small steps, but they could make a big impact at clubs.
You touched on something there, Shane, which is always it always comes up, right? The product. Now, I'm not one, so I think how do you say this? The product is, it's hearsay almost. Because it's a lot of it is to do with the way you sell it, right? Like, we've all been to Premiership games. Greatest load of crap you've ever, like, you know, you for whatever reason you'd have to go over, you spend a fortune on a ticket, you go to see. I mean, I've been to Manchester United, Man City games. Were awful, horrendous. You're looking at going, what's going on, you know?
That's every sport right, you can go, but, and the game
exactly,
itself can be, but, bad,
exactly. So you know, when you I know the Premiership is an extreme model, but the Premiership benefited purely by the complete promotion of Sky when they came in and took it over. Money, whatever. And it worked. That's fine. What we don't do well here is we don't sell the product. We don't sell it at all, for starters. You know, we don't profile players. You know, we don't see Sean Maguire, in a television advert selling, you know, something for Spar, like the way you'd see Bernard Brogan doing something along those lines. So we don't profile players. You don't profile players. Kids don't have somebody to aspire to. They can't associate with that player. And then there's a disconnect then between the club. I think, from what you're saying, Dan, I think there's great work going on in the clubs in terms of sort of trying to connect with the community, and whatever it is they're doing on a day-to-day basis. And I don't think that'll ever be an issue. I think the big issue is how we sell the product, and that seems to be where we're, you know, obviously, okay, the stadiums are all in disarray, and that's a difficulty. But
there can be a beauty in that as well.
Yeah, no, you're completely right, Dan. I'm totally right. I think you're, and you even touched on it there, Nate, when you were saying you guys are tapping into the kind of hipster market, and I completely agree. I mean, this is to completely get off the subject, right? The last time I was in Dalymount, my daughter was there on a Saturday, she was doing a bit of coaching on the pitch, and I had a little wander over to the far side, you know, that's completely derelict and shut down, and I had a walk down the steps in the back.
We invite those people in there.
Yeah. It looks brilliant. Yeah. You know, I was taking pictures of it because it was like something from, it's like a jungle. Yeah, because
Was there?
Nothing. But it's like from what you say, there is
that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. there's an adverse selling point there almost. Yeah. Like, you know, you just have to kind of tap into that kind of.
But when you talk about what you're selling, basically, what I think again what's happened to the clubs is they focus. When you look at, say, for instance, I spoke recently to the guy from Airtricity, where the clubs get two large billboards in their area. And this year, everyone had featured Dinny Corcoran, right? To me, that was a huge waste of spend. If I'm a Bowes fan, I know who Dinny Corcoran is, right? If I'm not a Bowes fan and I see a massive billboard with Dinny Corcoran on it, when I look at it, I've tuned out instantly because I'm not, you know, I don't go to Bowes games. And we've requested that we take them over ourselves. Like our last piece of market in our bus stop advertisement had a lady from Post Avant-Garde Russia, and it's her kind of shouting, it's the old Pravda image. And it was, first of all, a woman on a football poster, which you don't see. It had no football crest on it, had no Bohemians on it, it just had Bowes and a lady shouting it. And when people look at that, then they begin to think, right, what's this about? It's hitting all the things that they don't associate with League of Ireland football. And then you begin to get people in. And when you talk about coming to a game, you know, a lot of the reason people go to the Premier League is what you call post-trip anticipation. They're telling their friends, I'm going to be going to the Premier League, I'm going to be getting a flight over. The game can be bad, but they've built it up so much, they kind of make out in their head that they've had a good time. And the same comes for League of Ireland grounds. And you walk around a lot of towns in Ireland that go to a League of Ireland ground, you don't know you're there until you come to the turnstile.
Yeah.
You know, we got local graffiti artists in, and they exist across the country, and they'll happily, you know, paint the area for free, and they do really cool stuff. And then when a kid comes, he begins to get excited. You know, there's graffiti around, there's some lights happening. When you come in, I think bars are something that the league should press for. You know, all GAA clubs have bars. There's no reason that every League of Ireland ground can have a bar. It then adds another point to bring in revenue. It makes it more inclusive. Like our bars, when we've spoke to the council about the new Dalymount, they're more than about revenue. They're where the members of the club interact. And that's, again, something that happens at GAA clubs, but at most League of Ireland clubs can't happen. So the interaction between the fans happens just during the game when they're preoccupied watching a match. So I think there's a lot of things that can be improved.
Yeah, I think we have turned a corner in that. I think until recently, I think it purely was a blame game of it's not been sold right, let's point the finger at the FAI. And it, you touched on it earlier, I don't think clubs were doing a massive amount to help themselves. But I think we are now. Yeah. I think we are. I think, you know, I think over the last, you know, 5-6 years, you know, you'd read a lot of John O'Sullivan. I think most fellas into League of Ireland read a lot of John O'Sullivan stuff, and I know we were picking up ideas from the kind of stuff that he had going on down at Cork. And that, I mean, I suppose probably the most successful one for ourselves this year, Nathan, would have been, so I mean, I don't know how many clubs there are in Galway, but between myself or Johnny Glynn or coaching staff or players in pre-season, we got out to, I won't say all of them, a few of them fell through the cracks, but we got out to about 80-90% of the clubs in the Galway League with a 6-foot by 2-foot poster that was kind of, you know, made of hard cardboard, wasn't going to disintegrate straight away, with our full home fixture list for the entire season. And you'll probably have maybe a few clubs might have thrown it to one side as soon as we left, but by and large, you go into most clubs around Galway and these clubs have got this fixture list up in kind of on the front of their AstroTurf pitch, or, you know, at the side of the dressing rooms or something like that. And I mean, that definitely had a positive effect for us this year, you know.
It sounds already from this conversation that we're too focused on the macro, we're too focused when we talk about the League of Ireland on the big and on comparing it to the Premier League, and what can Dundalk do, what can Dundalk go on and achieve in the Europa League or qualifying for the Champions League, and maybe this vulture fund or investment fund that is coming in to take 25% of the club can fire them on to the next level. Where if the league is to have a long-term solid foundation, it needs to go right back to square one, to the community and to tapping into that first. When we think back to Bohemians, and I think a lot of people around the country probably think Bohemians are still in deep crisis because of what happened at Dalymount, and it seemed for a couple of years as though they were constantly on the verge of going out of business. How did you go from that level to where Bohemians are now, where it seems as though you are on that solid foundation?
Well, the first thing, we reduced our playing budget by over 90%. We told the members exactly. Just to make that clear, we had a board meeting about 5 years ago, and we kind of left the meeting thinking it was probably the last ever board meeting at Bohemian Football Club. And things were extremely bleak, and a lot of people, a lot of fans, a lot of supporters put in a lot of money and a lot of effort to get things back on track. We had, you know, it should be said that we'd huge support from local TDs and from the FAI. And thankfully, Dublin City Council came in. In many ways, actually, as much work as we all put in, Dalymount saved itself in some ways. The club's history, or the ground's history, the ground's own brand, and the fact that Dalymount's a name that everyone knows from Cork to Donegal played a big role in that. I don't think it would have happened if it had been Tauchet Park or you know, or Richmond Park or anywhere else. So that's one thing. But basically, when we did save the ground, you know, we've our debt more or less totally cleared, but we now have no, and it's the biggest freeing thing at the club. I think the idea of moving to members owned club, what it does is that we've no capacity to borrow, so no bank will lend to a League of Ireland club at present, so we can't borrow any money, so we have to run the club sustainably. And like, we're there now since 1890, so 128 years of members owned club, and the whole thing was built on a model of active citizenship, which is lost in modern society. The way people operate now is that they expect to pay something and get something back. They don't expect to pay to become a member and then to work at that as well. And it's about trying to tell people that that's the model that we're trying to aspire towards. But what we did is we reduced the playing budget massively. We don't expect to go back to full-time football anytime soon. We now brought in models where the players, we try and place the players in jobs. We've been successful in that in the last couple of weeks. We linked them to our commercial partners. We visited St. Pauli and spoke to some of their directors, FC United in Manchester, various other clubs that we look towards in the UK we had meetings with, and began to look at what you can do as a members owned club, connect to the area, and then to look at the club and say, right, we want to get in, you know, a group of players and a manager who have honest effort on the pitch, but are aware of what the club is about, and that they buy into that. You know, each time we sign a new player now at the start of each season, we meet them, we tell them what all facets of the club are about, who each person is, what each volunteer is. And before the last game of the season, actually, our secretary went in to thank the players for the season, and I think Trevor Crowley commented he'd never seen that happen. He just came in and thanked all of the players before the last game. We'd sold out the ground, you know, and we were going to finish fifth or sixth. So it's brilliant. And where you want to get to really with your fans is that you want to have a fairly consistent attendance, whether you're 10th or 2nd. You know, and that's where you need to get to. And that's a successful club. There's lots of clubs in the Premier League who'll never win the Premier League, but they sell their grounds out. And I think for too often, you know, League of Ireland clubs were about winning, and that was where it was at. You need to get into Europe or else it's a failure. And when each of the clubs can say, no, look, you know, we're going to be pretty steady on commercial income and attendances, irrespective of where we finish, then you've got a good league.
Yeah, well, so what you've effectively
change your model to deal with the situation you're in. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's perfectly fine. But the other clubs are at a different level. You know, they are aspiring to try and get to the Champions League.
And I don't think you shouldn't aspire to it, but I think you shouldn't risk it all. And I think that happened for a long time.
It did, absolutely did. But hopefully, fingers mm-hmm. crossed, those lessons have been learned. And you know the mistakes that, let's say, the likes of Shells would have made, perfect mm-hmm. example, won't be made again. But there has to be a club or clubs that are pushing forward, because otherwise we'll just be stuck at this level forever.
And I agree, but I think push forward with always an eye towards never jeopardising the club. You know, and I look at Cork. I think Cork should get, you know, maximum congratulations and respect from people. It's a members own club. They've massive crowds. You go to Cork City, it's a real event, you know, and they've managed to do that through integration into their area, and the kind of crowds they're getting and the commercial backing they're getting, it's entirely sustainable. Looking from the outside, it seems to be an entirely sustainable model. And I think that's what other clubs should look towards. You know?
Is that not, though, immediately where the conflict rears its head again, if we're talking about clubs should be aspiring? Like, Dundalk are the club we're looking at. Their average attendance is still in or around 3,000 at Oriel Park, which just isn't sustainable for a club looking at Europa League, Champions League over a long period of time. And I know they've always historically had a good connection with the community in Dundalk and would be seen as quite well supported. But I do wonder, I've been up in Oriel Park, if Dundalk don't win that game, if they don't get a decent result, are people leaving the stadium that night happy with their experience? And that, I think, is what Bulls now have, what clubs around the country need to have, that the result, while it is important, isn't everything, and that there is an entertainment factor, there is another side of it. We had Kieran Donaghy in here about a month ago talking about basketball down in Tralee, and his passion for it was incredible, but what they've done in Tralee with basketball down there should be the example for so many League of Ireland clubs, in that out of nothing they're getting 1,000 people pretty much every second Saturday night to watch a basketball game, because he looked at what they do in Boston and they play 100 games in the NBA, so by and large it's not that important whether they win or lose as long as they get to the playoffs at the end of the season.
Why are 1,000 people going to watch a basketball
because
game?
They looked at what they do in the NBA, which is it's a night out. It's the experience. Yeah. So they got themselves a mascot who goes out. Mm-hmm. They got a DJ in before the game. They turn the lights off now. The players come out. If you're 10, 12, this is a bloody entertaining evening.
Without getting to like simplistic examples, this year we had face painters at every game. Sounds so simple. It's two young girls, and you can leave a donation if you like. They both come to games anyway. Hundreds of kids get their face painted, and they might remember their face being painted more than us scoring 3 goals. Then you look at somebody a bit older than that, and you look at maybe you're 18, 19. We've had DJs or bands after nearly every game. So there might be a Northern Soul DJ, there might be some reggae music. But again, you're creating this bigger event. So if you've lost or you've won, there's things happening around that. And you can relate that to each of your demographics. You know, for an older person, it could be the bar, it could be a discussion about something. But you can look at each demographic and say, right, these are the 4 or 5 we've got. What can we tag on to their night to make it about more than football? And then you're hitting a model where you begin to insulate yourselves. And that's not to say you shouldn't kick on, you should. And if that's successful and your revenue start to grow. The other thing is, when you look at different demographics, the commercial partners the clubs had, like we have a long-term main sponsor now, which is brilliant. But we began to a couple of years ago. I saw what was happening at our own club a number of years ago, and I still see it from other clubs. They send out basically an email PDF of a list of sponsorship options. It's dinosaur stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. What you need to do is go and meet a commercial partner and say, this is what we're about, this is our vision, this is what the club represents and what we're trying to do. What's your organisation trying to do? And let's see if we can partner together. You'd never be going into a meeting with them to say, this is the price and this is what you get. You know, it's just such a transaction.
It's probably the upside to not being a massively successful side. Like, as you were saying, I don't know, maybe at Dundalk, is there a case of, well, do we need to put in a massive effort to the match night experience? You're getting to watch a fantastic football team who are winning almost every week. Surely that's enough for you. I don't think ourselves or yourselves are in the same boat that we can say that, look, here's the trophies. Are you not just happy enough with that? So I think we do have to kind of think outside the box and try and create the whole thing. And I mean, our last 3 home games of the season cleared over 2,000 at each of them. And obviously we were where we were in the league. So to be able to do that, obviously I'm on the field on match night. I wouldn't be as clued in as you'd be as to what the lads are doing off the field, but they must be doing something right to keep getting those kind of crowds back. So I think probably the onus is on the smaller clubs to probably do a little bit more.
There's a split, isn't there? Like, you know, I've got my player hat on here. I'm sort of
Dan's telling me all this stuff, and I'm sort of, you know, I'm trying to compute it all, like, you know, and
show me your medals.
To a point, right? Players do need to be aware of what's going on, but then they can't be too aware either, because they've got to focus on what their job is to do. And if you want to take Dundalk as a good example, you know, everything you said there about improving the match day experience, absolutely. I mean, I don't know why Dundalk, you know, obviously the success of the football club.
No, we're not having a pop, but
I completely, I think the club accepts it themselves, like, you know, and that's something that they are what I believe are they are working on. But the team, when you look at, and this goes to Cork as well, because otherwise people would be gone giving out saying Dundalk, whatever. But what it is, whoever it is at the top of the tree at the moment, at the moment it's Cork and it's Dundalk, they can achieve things now. They can do that now. We've seen it, you know, and they have to believe they can do that, because without that, there's no point in even turning up, you know. But when you look, I was nearly there 13 years ago. You know, Bowes would have been in a similar situation. It's there if you believe enough in it, and if you work hard towards getting there. And there has to be a disconnect between the players sometimes and what's going on at the club, like, you know. Absolutely.
But if you look at prize money, say, Street, one of the things you most commonly read, you look at any thread on League of Ireland, any discussion, everyone always points to the fact that this is the wages of people involved in football in Ireland, that this is what's given in prize money. To me, that argument is totally null and void. You could up the prize money tomorrow by 100%. Almost every club, in the absence of a plan, will spend that money on players. And it will just create this kind of boom and bust situation. And until the clubs actually say, right, if we can bring in an extra, you know, 10,000, 50,000, 100,000, and we're going to have prioritised areas that may be 3, 4, 10-year plans, and that's what's been absent. To a large extent, it's been the people managing the clubs, and a members-owned club has a lot of good things about it, but it also has some downfalls, and one of them is you've got a high turnover of people because it's a heavy workload and there's no financial reward for it, so sometimes things can drop. But, like, how many clubs in the League of Ireland have a kind of a data system where they back up their kind of information on a cloud-based?
How many clubs are digital?
Put any of these questions out there. They're operating in a way that is literally 1960s, and these are really simple things. You can partner with some of the biggest tech firms in the world in Dublin. Now you can partner with these people. Are willing to help us. Now, we went into Facebook and visited them a couple of times. The people that do our social media, they were happy to give us spend to advise us. We've gotten quite good at it, and that didn't cost anything. So I think, you know, I think for too long, you know, the easy thing to say is the FAI should do this or that, but I think the shift should come to clubs now.
Off the Ball,
home of the Saturday Panel, every Saturday from 1
on News Talk 106 to 108.
Welcome back to the Saturday Panel, 53106. If you have any texts, we're talking about the League of Ireland with Stewie Byrne, with Shane Keegan, the Galway United manager, and with Daniel Lambert, who's the strategic planning manager at Bohemians. Just looking at some of the texts, a text in from John, a long-time Cork City fan. Just wondering what the group think of central contracts like in rugby. Could this work in our league? I'm tired of watching our best players leave to poor first and second division English league clubs. Players kept in Ireland could play in the Champions League. Best players would bring in more fans. Maybe a 4 or 5 central contracts per team. These players would then be available to Martin and Roy as well to strengthen our bench players.
You need a huge buy into that now. When you think about that, you've got to sell that to the FAI. I think,
does that actually not also sum up probably the biggest problem the FAI face when dealing with the League of Ireland, trying to get buy-in amongst the clubs? If you were to have such a radical overhaul, rugby's totally different in that I guess they started the professional game from scratch, so they were able to implement this. To go to the League of Ireland clubs, you'd need every one of them to agree, and then who gets number one on that draft list?
Yeah, probably.
Is it Galway United because you were just relegated? Does that player want to move to Galway?
It probably works, Nathan, better because you've got 4 provinces. You know, you're only effectively dealing with 4 teams. Might be a little bit more difficult to do with when you're dealing with 10 clubs or 12 clubs, whatever the case may be. Certainly, just something in it that there might be a hybrid model there. But their whole, you know, I still go back to it as well. The way the rugby have done this, you know, the way the Simon Zeebo thing, you know, or if you're not playing here, you don't play for Ireland. Mm. I think there's something in that. I think
is it not a huge difference?
Yeah, there is a huge difference. But just
hang on a second.
The association, the rugby association, have effectively said, hang on a second, our job is to promote and develop the game here in Ireland, and that's one of the things they do. Okay. I'm not suggesting for a second that the FAI say, well, you can only pick domestic-based players, right? But I think there should be in you can start somewhere in an initial squad announcement, 32 players, two of them have to be domestic based players, or there has to be. It's
Does
been
that tokenism
before,
work?
No, but it's not about money, though, Stuart.
I think
it's been done before. You've got players coming in and playing in second division.
Mm.
You know, when you look at money, you look at the RFU. I presume that basically, you know, and I don't know their finances at all, but I'm assuming that the provinces, it's a fairly maybe even split. I know with the FAI, if you take it, basically, you know, they make most of their money, if not all of it, from the national team. And that the League of Ireland perhaps makes a small loss or a small profit. So that's where in any organisation you're going to look towards. And that again, if we can professionalise the league, clubs have identity, good commercial partners, you begin to raise, you know, the value of the league. And when you begin to raise its value, then people in a boardroom at the FAI will begin to, it begins to become more important. And it's not to say one needs to happen before the other, but I think that, you know, the RFU is probably more of a parity between what they earn from the, you know, the national team and then what they earn or what they can garner from the provinces, and that maybe doesn't exist in League of Ireland.
It could certainly indicate, for whatever reason, and that right, I understand that the income generated is probably a large part of it, but where the domestic game at the highest level would rank in list of priorities for the IRFU in comparison to where the domestic game would rank in list of priorities for the FAI is completely uncomparable. It's completely uncomparable.
Well, again, that goes back to the FAI are so reliant on the senior team to bring in all the cash for everything else, whereas the RFU can look at Munster, look at Leinster, and they bring in their own revenue as well. And also with someone like Simon Zeebo, so rough figures, Simon Zeebo, the RFU can offer him 350 grand, maybe 400 grand to keep him here. He's going for 700 grand. It's not a huge jump, right? It's probably a life-changing amount over a couple of years. Whereas the vast gap that, say, somebody like Robbie Brady could earn at Burnley compared to what he could ever earn, best case scenario in the League of Ireland,
it's too big.
Yeah, so I think we're probably gone a bit askew. I'm talking the rugby, the association, right? Are you can see their remit is purely focused on developing rugby in Ireland.
Mm.
All right, so they do what they have to do to keep promoting the game. The FAI would be the opposite, in my opinion, right? So there has to be some sort of a connect back, you know, between the domestic game here and the international team. It's completely disconnected now. I mean, we must be the only country in Europe that has no real connection between the domestic league and the national team.
Well, we do have the connection. It's just that those players then leave.
No, we don't. So you made the point, right, about it being tokenism. You know, if there was a requirement that in a 32-man squad, you must have two domestic based players, it's not tokenism because the players are actually good enough. That's the reality. You know, and you can go back down the list of all Sean Maguire, right? Do you think he became a better player when he went in the 3 or 4 weeks that he was at Preston to get into the national team? Darren Horgan, Keith Attie was the same. Went over to Birmingham within 3 or 4 weeks, he's in the international team. They're good enough. If the player is good enough, he's good enough. It's as simple as that. You know, it's they don't become a better player in 2 or 3 weeks or whatever the case may be when they go over to England. Okay, it's. I think what happens is it justifies the manager can justify his picking that player because he plays in England.
Mm.
But if he played in the domestic league, to be murder.
And I think it shows too. Sean Maguire's the small point. Sean Maguire's debut in the Aviva, I'd actually never seen anything like that. And you know, the chance of his name and the roar that went up for a guy who'd made his name with Cork City was remarkable. And I think that did show a national interest in the top players in League of Ireland was there. You know, his name was literally being chanted before he came on.
Yeah.
And that was an amazing thing to see. You know, and I hadn't seen that actually before in the Aviva or in Lansdowne for a player that had made his name in League of Ireland.
I mean, there is one way that you would probably get more League of Ireland players into a national squad, and that's if Stephen Kenny was the international manager. I think somebody in the setup, be they a manager, a head coach, an assistant manager, I think somebody in the international management setup should be League of Ireland based or have a really, really strong League of Ireland know-how, or just is batting for League of Ireland players, essentially. Like at the moment, I wouldn't think there's really anybody in there kind of saying, Martin, you need to bring in this fella, you need to have a look at this fella. I wouldn't think that's the kind of conversation that goes on.
But the problem is, Martin wouldn't even look at the League of Ireland.
Well, he does go to games.
Yeah, he probably, look, Nate, let's call it a spade. He's no interest in League of Ireland. He doesn't. You know,
no, but he goes to games. He had looked.
Yeah, he's probably been made going to games. right? But he never put anyone.
It's probably part of his job at times to go to games.
Yeah, well, it's the same in England.
But if Stephen Kenny gets the job, do you think Stephen Kenny is going to spend more time at League of Ireland games than at Premier League games?
And just to come back at that, I don't know whether that would actually happen because, you know, Brian Kerr was in a very, very similar situation when he got the Ireland job. Now, I know it was different when Brian had the job because I'd say probably the majority of the players he had at his disposal were playing at the top level in England. And, you know, but it would be probably different now, all right. But the fact of the matter is, Nathan, there's just a complete and utter disconnect. You know, and this crap that as soon as you go to England, as soon as you're on the plane, you're eligible to play for the national team.
There's no way, it's completely hypothetical, but there's no way, if Stephen Kenny was the Irish manager, there's no way Daryl Horgan would have had to have been in England before he got picked.
Yeah.
There's no way Sean McGuire would have had to have been in England before he got picked. Probably Richie Towell at his peak probably would have been in an Irish squad if the likes of a Stephen Kenny, or I'm just plucking Stephen Kenny's name out. You know, I just think there needs to be, it doesn't necessarily have to be the manager. I think Stephen is more than well equipped to be the manager, is my personal opinion, but I think somebody in the setup should have a really, really, and should be just batting for the League of Ireland player. I think there's I think there's possibly 2-3 players in the league at the moment who I think would be well able to mix it.
Almost that you have an official scout for the Irish team just solely looking at the League of Ireland, who's a visible presence, who almost gives the confidence to the players at least that somebody is in there within the setup. Absolutely. When the squad has been discussed. Julian Lee, look at the geographical spread of the teams. Meath, for one, hasn't got a team. Wholesale change needed. Have one team per county mirroring the GAA setup and people may buy into it. Dublin, the obvious exception, might need 2 or 3 teams.
Well, that's a key point. Like, when you speak about rugby, I was going to say that earlier on. You have to make yourself relevant. So when we looked at this a couple of years ago, right? When you say to the average, you talk to a person who's not a League of Ireland fan, and you show them a list of League of Ireland teams, and you ask them to talk about them, they just say that's a group of League of Ireland teams. They find it very difficult to identify what one is about. Now, we've earned a couple of names, like you said, we've been tagged the hipster club for various reasons, but, you know, that's at least it's something outside of football. Yeah. Right? So again, it's about creating identities, but it's very difficult to create an identity in a crowded environment geographically. For ourselves, we're the only Northside Premier Division club. We focused on North Dublin, and that's where our focus will continue. But I do think that, you know, there probably does need to be more of a regional spread, and what that gives isn't just the geographical area to pick up fans, it's sponsors and it's an identity. And I think that the clubs don't link into, like, a lot of League of Ireland clubs have very illustrious histories, you know, big European wins and really interesting kind of formations and historical backgrounds to them. They're never used in any marketing. You know, when there's very little use of video content. Facebook now is all video content. Yeah. It's very primitive promotional tools. But when you talk about a regional spread, that should be looked at. You know, I think the discussion's happened before. I know Fintan Drury looked at it with Platinum. But the idea of bringing in like a big Belfast team would be great for the league. You know, it'd be really strong for the league. Having Derry there, I think, is brilliant.
Would you be all right with Bulls and Shells merging?
Well, I'll tell you a story. I'll tell you a story that I think is interesting. I had that chat with Pat Fennell a number of years ago, and he was saying to me that wouldn't be a bad idea. Now, I wouldn't be for it. I'm a total Bulls fan, and I'd be totally against it. But what his point was this. He said, if you had 2,000 or 3,000 people going to a Bulls game, and you had 1,000 or 2,000 going to Shells, it's lower now, but at the time, and they were to merge, how many people, and the issue would always be, what will they be called, or the histories, right? And I'm against it totally. But he said, you know, how many people are you pissing off, basically, to create something that could potentially be bigger? Now, to me, that's moving into the commercialisation of football. So I would be against it. But I do think that, you know, looking at bringing in teams from different areas, I thought it would have been a good idea maybe to bring in Tralee, you know, but I do think a Belfast team coming in. But what's key then when you are a club is to look at, beyond competing in the league, which is what everyone's doing, what are you selling to people? You know, and that can be different in a rural area to an urban area, or you can bring in, like, we've brought in some kind of, there was some backlash with some of our fans. We tried to bring in issues that we thought were important, so we very much get involved at the moment with the End Direct Provision campaign for migrants in Ireland, and we work with the movement of asylum seekers in Ireland, Massey. You know, we've had players play for Bohemians who are in Direct Provision, and we think it's a human rights issue, so we've gotten involved in that, and we came out very strongly for the marriage equality referendum, and had pieces about that in literature. We've come out very well in terms of the refugee crisis in the Mediterranean. We've had, you know, refugee days in Dalymount where we get some people in and there's music, and we've linked up with the Irish Refugee Council, and things like that for us are important social issues that the club can get involved in and have a net positive impact upon, but also then reach new people. You know, and every club can do these things, but it's about, again, looking at the broader picture rather than just the football.
Just on the side point, what would be the issue with having a concert in Dalymount?
The issue at the moment, we may have one. We've gotten permission to run a major event before Dalymount's demolished, so we will have a concert there. The issue is just cost to do with tracking the pitch. is the main actual cost.
I've always wondered why there aren't more concerts in stadiums.
Now, there has been pretty
huge financial generation.
Yeah, it could be done. I'd imagine Turner's Cross could be one. I don't know if they've looked at it.
In Talla, I imagine it would be.
Talla, I think there was one due to take place there. Now, Talla is obviously owned by South Dublin County Council, so I don't think Rovers could financially gain from that. But again, that's another separate issue, is a move to municipal stadiums, which I think would be fantastic.
Just going back, the initial text, I think the chap was talking about the geographical spread. Like, I'd say two things at the moment, right, that are have probably changed in the last decade or so, right? You're seeing more and more non-dubs, I suppose, essentially in the Irish squad. There's a really, really geographical spread in the Irish squad at the moment. I think that's a huge, huge thing for us. And obviously, you're seeing more and more players in the international squad who initially started out in the League of Ireland, right? That means League of Ireland clubs around the country and... basically, we need enough League of Ireland clubs around the country to be catering for the entire country, that no talented young player really should be having to drive maximum more than an hour to be able to play for his local League of Ireland side. Like, if you take it, right, obviously, so Sean Maguire is the big buzz name at the moment, right? So, I had Sean for 6 years. I had Sean from the age of 10 to 16, right? Sean lives 20 minutes or so from my home place, right? A couple of things on Sean. Firstly, if Waterford United didn't exist, Sean Maguire probably wouldn't exist. All right? Probably wouldn't exist in all likelihood. The second thing is, the big thing, I mean, we talk about why the country underperforms at national level. You often hear comparisons with Iceland. That seems to be the buzz thing because they're doing so well, to talk about Iceland, all right? And I'm not saying this in an anti-GAA way, right? Because I'd be big into the GAA, right? But, like, the GAA obviously is probably the biggest reason for us underperforming, I feel, all right? Because we're losing so many players who could be fantastic, fantastic soccer players in that direction, all right? Sean Maguire, trust me, an old young lad inside out, the reason Sean Maguire has progressed into the Irish international soccer team is because he wasn't a good hurler. I mean, if he had been a good hurler, I mean, at the age of 17, if Sean Maguire was on the Kilkenny minor panel and the minor Kilkenny manager had said to Sean Maguire at 17, listen, you have to quit the soccer there because we need you here, he would have been lost and we wouldn't know about him, you know? So, thankfully, with the 17s, 19s, 15s and soon to be 13s coming in, there's pathways around the country that can rival your local, your inter-county minor setup and that kind of thing. And I think it will be a help in trying to, I don't know if we're going to win that battle for the hearts and minds down the country. It's a different story in Dublin, obviously, but I'm talking about the kind of my experience from down the country. I think the underage structures are going to be a big help there.
I completely agree with that point. I do have to say, I think the GAA is definitely the biggest obstacle when it comes to sort of developing and promoting players from a very young age. You spoke about the fact that Sean Maguire stuck with soccer because he wasn't good enough to play hurling, right? And that's probably true. And I'd say that's true for an awful lot of other players. Probably they're not big enough. They're not, you know, whatever the case may be. But wouldn't it be great if Sean Maguire possibly chose to stay at soccer because maybe, you know, he was trying to be the next Wes Houlihan, or he was trying to be the next whoever it is. And that again comes back to, we don't profile players the way we should at a level the way the GAA should. Kids, you know, the kids watch TV and they consume everything and they see all this. They see the
Did they not see Robbie Brady? Did they not see Jeff Hendrick? Did they not see?
They do, yeah, they do. But then they're aspiring then to try and to play in England, like, you know, that's where the clubs here are kind of missing out.
I think the community aspect of it, and we've probably gone off in a different tangent. We never really got into the facility side of it, which so many people are texting in about, being so important in terms of the match day experience. But like you mentioned Bernard Brogan there and Super Value, and we did a panel on Lady Sport recently and what Lidl have done
that ad is unbelievable.
But what they're doing is getting into the community. It's so Bernard Brogan is the figurehead, but what Super Value want is, they're in every community, the GEA is in every community, the link up is there.
Yeah, exactly.
So for sponsors to come in, they need to see that the League of Ireland is within a lot of communities, that Irish football is within a lot of communities and embraces the entire community, where probably right now a lot of the bigger sponsors look at it and think, well, actually ladies football is in more communities than the League of Ireland.
You're completely right. And again, another measure for clubs should be that we've had it now, and I think some other clubs, sponsors should be coming to you and they should want to get involved with your club. You know, whether it's Rovers or Bows or Cork or anyone else, they should look at what you're about and be able to, you know, kind of see, right, this is what they're about beyond football, and that matches with our kind of, you know, our kind of what we're about as a brand and who we're trying to reach, and then they become involved with you. And that's never been the case. And again, that's the club. It's the work you don't see that's going on. Cork have been brilliant at it. And as I said earlier on, there was something else when we said about earlier on about funding. And when you're looking at bringing in money, there's various ways to bring in money aside from bringing in, you know, having the FEI fund contracts or having bigger prize money. You know, we were in receipt of that European funding that I mentioned with Cork. But obviously, you know, the Daily Mail project is a DCC and central government funded project. So clubs can access funding from local government, from central government, from other bodies, from the EU, and they'll access that funding by being relevant. And also by having clear plans, and that's back to the strategic plans the clubs have now, and they should be things that are quite basic actually, and that they then enable different income streams, allow bigger sponsors, and suddenly the whole thing begins to rise together. And I think we're on the edge of that now.
You're not going to be happy, lads, because we're going to have to wrap this so we can concentrate in the Premier League for the the afternoon. But thanks a million for coming in. Listen, it's a conversation we'll have to come back to, particularly on the Tuesday nights when we start heading back towards the season. There's an awful lot more to talk about in terms of the League of Ireland. But Stewie, thanks a lot for coming in. Shane, best of luck with the new season.
Thank you.
Whether it's the First Division or the Premier Division.
No, it'll be first.
You're planning for the First Division as it's going.
Yeah, bounce back.
Daniel, thanks a lot for coming in, and very best of luck with Bowls as well.
Off the Ball.
Home of the Saturday Panel. Every Saturday from 1.
On News Talk 106 to 108.